We get used to the terminology attached to wildfires, things like lined and contained and controlled. And there are other terms that end up in there as well, terms like salvage logging, especially when a wildfire burns into an area with big trees. There's often pressure to go in and log the burned trees. They're valuable for mills and for turning into lumber and other wood products. One claim is that the forest will grow back better if the land is managed intensively, including by logging the existing trees. A recent study that includes researchers from Oregon State and Portland State Universities shows that Douglas firs grow back just fine if the forest is left alone. Let's get further into the specifics of the research. Two guests, Melissa Lukash is a research assistant professor in the Department of Geography at Portland State University. Dr. Lukash, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David Hibbs is with us as well. He's a professor emeritus in the Oregon State University College of Forestry. Dr. Hibbs, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So good to have you both here. I want to point out up front, this study was not done in response to any recent fires, and we did schedule the chat about it before things got ugly with the campfire in Northern California. So can one of you tell us what the starting point for the research was?
Well, this work was done back in 2006 and 7 or so. There had been a bunch of work done on forest recovery in very shortly after fires, and really no one had been out looking at 10 or 20 years after fires to see what there was to be seen. We decided we should go look.
So this is a chance to pick up off of some previous research or to pick up the data from previous research?
Well, I suspect you and some of your listeners will remember the work after the Biscuit Fire, I believe it was, which showed that salvage logging was pretty hard on regeneration that was present 1 or 2 years after fire. And we were interested in seeing what the long-term effects of that kind of activity were. How long is that window for regeneration?
And we were interested in explicitly comparing sites that were unmanaged, sites where natural regeneration occurred without any human intervention, and comparing managed sites with the salvage logging and replanting.
So, Melissa, you did have, it sounds like, a fair amount of plots to work with where you could compare notes on places that were managed and places that were left alone.
Yeah, well, when you read the study, right, it's obvious that almost all of our plots were in California, and there were only a couple in Oregon. So we were doing a field study in the Klamath Mountain, which spans both states, right? But we only had two plots in Oregon because in Oregon, we more extensively manage after wildfires than in that same region in California. So basically, you know, we had unmanaged and managed sites in California because in 1987, when those fires burned, there were sites where the Forest Service couldn't get to the sites, difficult road access, and it was just a larger amount of fires that year. So there were lots of areas to choose from in California and not so many in Oregon. I think there were just two plots in Oregon.
It's interesting to see how things emerge over time. I mean, I remember the 1987 fire season. I was living here, and it was a terrible fire year. And there were, in fact, I remember specifically in Siskiyou County, there was more acreage burning than there was in the entire state of Oregon in September of that year. And so here's a chance to go back and look at some of the effects of that much later on. Were you looking, Melissa, though? I mean, or did you just have the opportunity through what was available to look at to expand the zone in space to make sure you got different forest types, elevations, tree species, directions of slopes, all that sort of thing?
Oh, Dave should speak to that because he was part of the design.
Okay.
The study that Melissa helped us with here was really just comparing with managed and unmanaged sites within the Douglas fir zone in that Northern California, Southern Oregon region. And we were looking at north-facing and south-facing slopes there. This was a part of a larger study that was looking only at unmanaged sites that covered a larger elevation range and a larger moisture gradient.
So some of these places are fairly dry and some of them are somewhat moist?
Certainly in that region, there's both with elevation, from low elevation, it's pretty hot and dry, to higher elevations, it's cooler and wetter. Or as you go from the ocean inland, you get drier. So there's quite a range of moisture conditions. And I think it's it's important to be clear that the results of this study apply to that region down there where Douglas fir can do pretty well. If you go to drier sites, which usually means more east of where we were or lower elevations of where we were, I'm not sure what would happen. I suspect regeneration is harder to get.
So just a general question for you, Dave. Over all the years you've been working in the College of Forestry, do you find that it is hard to get that particular message across, that forests from place to place are that different, that what happens in a forest in the greater Portland area is going to be very different from what happens to a forest in southern Oregon?
I think there's less challenge with professionals. Most of them are used to thinking this way. I think it's the lay audience that's important to help them know you don't want to take a result from one place and apply it blanketly across a landscape.
The bit of research we're talking about here is called Post-Fire Management Affects Species Composition but Not Douglas Fir Regeneration in the Klamath Mountains. It was published in October in the journal Forest Ecology and Management by a number of researchers, and we have two of them with us, Melissa Lukash from Portland State University's Geography Department and Forestry Professor Emeritus David Hibbs from Oregon State University. Questions, comments? You might have just a few. We are talking about our part of the world and about the kinds of trees that grow here. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So one of the sentences in the body copy here was really interesting to me. Concerns about conifer regeneration have a long history in the Klamath region of Northern California and Southern Oregon. Concern from what angle, David?
I think Melissa could have some good thoughts on this, too.
Okay.
But one of the bits of history that I'm most aware of is that back in the late 70s through the mid-80s, there was a research program in Southern Oregon, the FIR program, F-I-R, and their focus was on regeneration of difficult Forest Service and BLM sites down there. How can we get trees growing back on them? And it was incredibly challenging.
I remember the program. FIR was a forest intensified research or forest.
That's correct.
Yeah,
good,
okay.
Good for you.
Well, they talked about things like they could grow trees on the side of a billiard ball, but
well, I mean, they were able to get trees started in a lot of places, but if you went back 10 years later, a lot of those seedlings had died there. But in any case, I mean, what it really was showing was that it was on certain kinds of sites, these are the gravelly sites where they don't hold much moisture, the south-facing slopes, the low-elevation sites that are hot and dry. Getting trees to grow on them can be pretty darn difficult.
So, go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, and you can see that, too, in our study. Our study shows that, you know, in terms of Douglas fir regeneration, that actually the difference between north and south-facing slopes is quite a bit bigger than the management effect, right? That those south slopes that are hotter and drier have much lower conifer regeneration than those north slopes. So it's those, you know, soil moisture and, you know, heat load, the high intensity, that makes it difficult for those conifers to regenerate on those south slopes.
Historically, do we have any idea why there often were trees on those south-facing slopes? I mean, do we think those were because there were a period of wet years in which the conditions were favorable?
I think we could make up a story for you.
Make up a story, but based
on
some firm assumptions, though.
we call it a hypothesis at
okay.
this point, right? I think there are several possible factors here, and I've driven between Grants Pass and Medford a lot, and you see some of those bare south-facing slopes, and yet, at least early on, I remember snags sticking up out of them. Well, those are slopes that have been close to people for a long, long time, particularly post-European settlement. Fire has been very frequent through that region. And it's changed the soil characteristics. It has pushed seed sources for conifers far, far away. And something that I think it's important to remember is that the trees that early settlers saw on those hills around Medford and Grants Pass may have been quite old and started under a cooler, moister climate regime than we see today.
All right. So then when you go in and take the trees out and the climate is different now, then the conditions that did exist when those trees began to grow don't exist anymore.
Right. And it's a lot tougher to be a seedling getting started than an established tree. An established tree can hang on through rather tough climate changes up to a point anyway, where once you lose those older trees, those established trees, getting new ones back can be an extra challenge.
And I think it could be even harder in the future as the climate warms and we get more wildfires. It could be even tougher for those seedlings to get established.
We're talking to Melissa Lukash at Portland State University in the Geography Department and David Hibbs, Professor Emeritus of Forestry at Oregon State University, about research they participated in, which came out with a publication last month called Post-Fire Management Affects Species Composition But Not Douglas Fir Regeneration in the Klamath Mountains. Essentially, Douglas firs often grow back pretty well by themselves. We'll get further into the discussion topics there with you, and you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760. By phone, by email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. So, Melissa, what were some of the things that you expected to find versus what you did find?
Well, I mean, we definitely expected to find some differences in species between managed and unmanaged sites and north-south slopes, which we did indeed find. We expected, obviously, that to find a difference in the snags, those dead trees. So, you know, in those managed sites where you're salvage logging, you're obviously removing the snags, and, you know, that plays out in the story of the paper. I would say that it was unexpected that the conifer regeneration would be so similar between the managed and unmanaged sites. I mean, you know, Dan Donato's work had shown there were some similarities. There was some work from the Dan Donato's work showed there was high conifer regeneration after fire, and there were some studies from the 80s that had looked at post-fire management. But I think at least I was surprised to see that the conifer regeneration was so high on those unmanaged sites and that they were indistinguishable.
So basically, whether it was managed or not, the grow back was about the same?
Yeah, so that surprised me. I don't know about you, Dave, but I'd thought, you know, with, you know, salvage logging, that there, you know, might be some inhibition of conifer regeneration was my thought, but because you're replanting, I thought that would sort of usurp any sort of negative effects of salvage logging, and so I thought you would see that planting signal, and we didn't.
So what was the greatest determiner then of whether Douglas firs grew back or not? Either of you? David?
I mean, I think
we found seedlings of Douglas fir and some ponderosa pine, and as we went up in elevation, some grand fir, just about anywhere we looked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one factor that could play an important difference as we look at how fires are behaving today is seeds only go so far from a parent tree. And so it's important to have seed sources scattered in the landscape. The historic fire regime in that part of the Northwest here was something we would, in our jargon, would call a mixed severity fire. It was kind of patchy. Some places were light underburns, and some places were darned hot and killed everything. But what it did do from a tree regeneration standpoint is leave seed sources scattered pretty broadly across the landscape. As fires increase in severity broadly on a landscape and we shift from this mixed severity pattern to a high severity pattern, we lose seed sources. Then, if we're going to get trees back, we may really have to be planting them.
We have an email here from Mike in Medford who wants to talk about what we're talking about here. He says, what can scientists do to enact favorable policy when departments like the EPA have been filled with industry insiders? Even in the best of times, both parties are being funded by forest industry groups, essentially blocking any policy that is detrimental to their bottom line. Thanks, says Mike in Medford. Any thoughts of David Hibbs?
boy, that's a can of worms.
Isn't it, though?
I have always thought that as a scientist, it was important for me to be very careful when I stepped into the policy arena that I'm not compromising my believability as a scientist. I don't want my research results to appear to be goal-driven, you know, certain ecological or management outcomes. So I haven't spent much time in the policy arena, and I'd be careful with that one.
All right. Go ahead, Melissa.
I guess, he refers to, EPA and officials in EPA, and we shouldn't forget that, in the Klamath area, I think it's about 60% of the land is actually owned by the Forest Service. So when we talk about management of these lands, we're talking about the Forest Service and not the EPA, and we're not talking about, necessarily appointees by the government. I mean, a lot of the management that goes on in that region is dictated by the National Forest Management Act in terms of replanting and processes that go on and are not dictated by, recent appointees.
Good point.
All right. So, well, that's the politics side. Let's get back into some of the science of this, though, because when I'm looking at the highlights you list here, that as you pointed out already, management had no impact on Douglas fir regeneration. Whether the land was managed or not, the results were very, very similar.
Yeah. So that was one of our, sort of on the, dabbling a little bit on the policy recommendations with this idea that we felt like what we tried to do, at least, was to give some evidence for the Forest Service that that it perhaps isn't necessary to replant, especially on these in this region, given these sort of caveats with elevation and forest type and things, but just in general, some evidence to show that conifer regeneration in this area is very high, and that maybe to think about trying to tailor replanting efforts to address the fact that the regeneration is already really high. So, for example, one of the things that we find is there's no difference between managed and unmanaged in Douglas fir, so perhaps it's not as necessary to plant Douglas fir, but we found that there was a lot more ponderosa pine on the south slopes when they managed, so maybe tailoring more towards promoting ponderosa pine and replanting on those south slopes, but maybe not on the north slopes where it didn't make a difference.
But even before you get to replanting, I mean, do you have any prescriptions here or observations about the removal of existing trees from the land?
Your turn, Dave.
We didn't find that there was any difference in particularly Douglas fir quantity of regeneration where they managed and didn't manage. And managed involved not only the planting and whacking some competing shrubs, but that was salvage logged as well. So one would conclude from this that in that area, salvage logging had minimal impact on conifer regeneration over the long run.
Yeah,
I don't doubt in the short run it was hard on the little ones that got started in the first year or two. But the regeneration process was something that extended over, the 2 decades that we were looking at. We found seedlings that were 15 years old and 2 years old. They were continuing to colonize even, 18 to 20 years after these fires.
So yeah, we didn't try to separate out the salvage logging from the replanting because, in this region, they have this sort of 4-step management process. And so we were just looking at those sites, the common management practices, the salvage logging, and then the site prep where you kind of get ready for planting, then you plant, and then you do the shrub removal to try to keep the shrubs at bay. And so we were taking advantage of that sort of natural experiment that had gone on. And so it was a sort of a 4-step management process that we were looking at. We didn't try to separate out salvage logging from replanting.
So is there a recommendation here then, or the beginnings of a recommendation here that forest managers need not feel like they've got to go out and replant after a fire event, that sometimes just leaving things alone can have the same effect?
I think that's certainly true. Many places, and my recommendation would be that everywhere has old fires in it. So if you're looking at a new fire and trying to decide how to manage it, go out and look at some of the old fires and see what has happened there. Where do you find good regeneration? What species is it? Does that meet your goals? And if it does, you're great. And if it doesn't, then there may be some opportunities for some active management.
Melissa Lukacs, any surprises in what the study turned up, particularly for you?
Just in the conifer regen, I think was the main one. I think that's the one that sticks out in my mind.
All right. We have an email here I want to close with. It's from Wayne, who points out that he runs a business called Natural Yards. He talks about clear cutting and how that became a prevalent thing. He says, what I noticed in the change in logging practices is that an old growth forest acts like a sponge holding the heavy rains and letting them soak into the groundwater for later use. A clear cut forest will let all the rain run off, silting up the creeks and rivers and not saving the water for later in the summer. I don't hear this talked about much. What do you think? Which will have to be questioned for another day, because as you can hear by the music, we've run out of time. The research we're talking about here is in the Journal Forest Ecology and Management, dated October 26th. It is titled Post-Fire Management Affects Species Composition but Not Douglas Fir Regeneration in the Klamath Mountains. It is 6 different researchers, including the two we have here, Melissa Lukacs from the Geography Department at Portland State University and David Hibbs, Professor Emeritus at the Oregon State University College of Forestry. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.